So we've all heard that famous quote, if you want to make God laugh, tell him about your plans. Well, that's kind of what this first episode's about. Actually, I guess it's kind of what this whole podcast is about. But anyway, we all know the drill. You plan things to go one way, then life takes you this way. And sometimes it doesn't even seem like life really knows what it's doing either. But you roll with it, you adapt, and you move on. Or you don't. And you carry that miscalculation or misstep with you for a long time. Today's episode is all about the plans we make when it comes to our careers, and what happens when it doesn't work out. For the first interview, I talked with someone struggling to find that ideal job. For the second interview, I talked with someone who landed in an ideal job, but then had it taken away from him. Okay, first episode. Are you nervous? I'm nervous. Anyway, I'm Mike Peters, your terrible host, and this is The Setback. Okay, let me make sure that's recording. Yep, I'm recording. All right, so if you're ready, just start going.
All right, let's do it. The situation kind of, I guess, started for me back in college. I had this like vision. First, I'm going to do some internships, then I'm going to graduate and go to a small ad agency. That was always the plan to start, and then it was like, be there for a year, 2 years, and after that, head on up to the Big Apple.
Nice. But why New York, and why not some other bigger city?
Yeah, New York kind of popped up for me as like a place to go solely because of advertising. You know, in a lot of ways, it's ad mecca, so it's like, if you can make it out there, you can make it kind of wherever you want. Like, I kind of saw it as like a challenge to myself.
Okay, so I see. So you've got New York in your sights, but what do you do to get there? Like, what are the steps that you're going to take?
Sure. It's weird because like when I originally made kind of this like 5-year, 10-year, whatever plan, I didn't really like know what the steps were at the time. Like, all I knew was I had to get like real world, you know, ads out into the world. And to do that, I would have to get into an agency that could accomplish that. And to get into that agency, like, even before then, I had to, like, I don't know, put together an okay portfolio of work, a body of work.
Yeah. Well, okay, so go back to when you were like in college, kind of having that vision. What happened after that? Like, you graduated or what? Yeah, what happened?
So I graduated in 2018, 2 years ago. Thank you. And then like seven days later, I moved out to Madison, Wisconsin, where I currently am. Like, all, you know, part of the plan. I found a small agency in Madison. I was like, this seems like a good place to start.
Right. I mean, it sounds like the plan's going smoothly so far. But like, what point was it where you're like, okay, I need to enact the next part of this plan?
So we're in like January 2020 or something in that range. 2020 has hit, but shit has not hit the fan like too hard yet in the world. May was my official like 2-year anniversary. And so it wasn't totally hinged on that, but kind of in January, like, I knew it was approaching. It was like, well, now it's time to move on. Like, you've learned a lot from a lot of really cool people, but I ended up like giving myself somewhat of an ultimatum where I kind of just told myself like, all right, you can make it to New York City, like copywriting in New York City. Like, you've always planned to, gunning for March, but, you know, if it happens in April, like, it's got to be by April. And if you haven't made it by April and it's May and you're still in Madison, Wisconsin in May of 2020, I will consider that the biggest failure of my life, which I recognize is a little bit harsh.
Yeah. Well, so what did you do to get the ball rolling?
Sure, yeah. You know, in early March, I was physically in New York City, and I had like an interview or two, and, you know, I was just meeting people and starting to like really speed that ball up. And a week after I flew back was when pretty much everyone went into quarantine.
Well, did you get any follow-up from any of those people that you talked to?
Man, I mean, those conversations, like, slowly just kind of dried up to, like, oh, you know, like, we're on hold, like, we'll keep you posted. And, you know, headhunters just kind of like, oh, you know, we haven't heard anything from any of the agencies. Like, they might be on, like, a hiring freeze. And then, like, that became, like, they're definitely on a hiring freeze. And it just slowly became this thing where any opportunity that either was already existing or, like, the theoretical existence of new opportunities, like, those just slowly dried up in the sun.
Yeah. So how is your head at that point? What are you feeling?
It was kind of like feeling the earth crumble a little bit beneath my feet where, yeah, just everything disappeared right before my eyes a little bit. And it was just very disheartening. And like, I had to keep like attempting to remind myself like, hey, like it's, you know, there's a global pandemic. It's not because you're portfolio was shitty, but then I'd look at my portfolio and I'd be like, ah, but maybe if your portfolio was better, like, you could have been in March. And it's like, what percentage of this is me, what percentage of this is I don't know, the job market? Like, where does the blame lie, and how do I not mentally beat myself with a brick for missing this arbitrary deadline that I made years ago?
Right. Well, I mean, why make this goal at all? Like, are you kind of rethinking it at all, or?
That's a really tough one, actually, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because, again, like, I don't have the answer for myself. Like, you know, as far as career goals go, I had this, you know, the plan that I mentioned earlier, but there's been this thing, like, kind of itching at me where I'm like, okay, I laid out this plan, and, like, things are going, you know, okay, you know, things are moving, but is this, like, why did I do this? Like, I don't know, sometimes I think about it, like, what was, like, the goal of all this? What was the point of all this? Was it to have a successful career? Like, what does that mean? Like, do I give a shit? I don't know. Is it because I want to have, like, Super Bowl ads? Like, is it so I one day I can, like, sit down with a bunch of friends, like, watching the Super Bowl and be like, oh, I wrote that one, and, you know, have 30 seconds where people are like, oh, that's kind of cool, and like, that's my career? Like, is that an aspiration? Like, I don't know. I don't, maybe.
Yeah. Well, so how did this feeling of failure kind of manifest itself?
I think the biggest thing for me was it really tanked my ability to focus. It became this thing where even if I was in a meeting and working and getting stuff done and succeeding to a degree and like getting work made, it was always like in my mind, in like, and not just in the back of it, like it was pretty central. And there were definitely times where you know, I'd wake up in the morning and just be like absolutely dreading the thought of not being able to move on, like not necessarily dreading like, oh, like I can't stand working here anymore, like I hate this agency, because it's definitely not the case, but it's like just knowing that I potentially could have been elsewhere at this very moment was very like physically taxing and mentally draining. And, you know, just being like slow to wake up, like a lot of very late nights, just kind of like staring at the ceiling. And honestly, if you want to talk about like physical manifestations, one of the things that always brings up for me, at least, is I get this thing where I'll check my Gmail, like, and LinkedIn, like, I'll check it 3 times in, like, a period of 10 seconds. Like, it's insane. My thumb will just autopilot refresh 3 times. I'll close Gmail, open LinkedIn, refresh it, and then close LinkedIn and then open Gmail back up and just be, like, staring for something that I know is not gonna come, especially at 4 a.m. on a Friday night.
Yeah. Well, so you're feeling a lot of this inside, but could other people tell that you were feeling this way? Like, did you talk to anybody? Did your friends notice?
I think it was noticeable to some people. I mean, I typically consider myself somewhat of a, like, a private person, I guess. I, usually don't express how I'm feeling from a, like, you know, reaching out to people and being like, ah, this is really tough for me to deal with right now. Like, my parents, for example, they knew about that ultimatum. Probably the only people who are really, like, plugged in and aware of this are, like, a select few of my coworkers who read my face and, like, will ask me about it, and then, you know, I'll talk to them about it. I'm a very emotive person, and when we're on, like, Zoom calls or XYZ, it's pretty obvious when I'm under a state of duress. It's been, like, you know, definitely a noticeable fluctuation, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Well, so how's it going now?
It's still going. I mean, I think in the past few weeks in particular, you know, it's improved to a degree for me, just like mentally. I think I've been able to separate myself a little bit from the global situation and pin it less on myself. You know, I don't expect that to ever go away permanently, and I'm definitely still in, like, kind of constant fight or flight mode a little bit. Honestly, a large part of it hinges on my workload. When things are slow at work, and, you know, I've fewer projects and more time to just kind of, like, stew. Like, maybe I've plenty of writing and concepting time for a spot, but then, like, all of that empty space then gets filled with that anxiety. Right now, and in particular in the past couple of weeks, I've been super busy, which is awesome. And I'm, like, working on this project for a couple hours, and then on this project for a couple hours. And then, you know, I get home at 10 p.m. or midnight and then, like, pass out immediately. Like, I don't have time to kind of stew and wallow and be all gross and self-pitying. When I'm not given that time, it's great. But I can't really, like, when my days aren't filled with work, I can't help it but, like, creeps back up into my brain. It is end of July. I'm still here, and, like, I don't have an answer. Like, I don't have any sort of reconciliation for it. It's just like, here I am, you know, struggling to figure it out.
So it took me a very long time to find my first real job. I worked at a small ad agency for like 30 days, and it was just absolutely miserable. And I quit and probably would have been fired, and found myself back at the place that I worked in college, which was just working at a local Best Buy. Kind of found my way through the Best Buy experience over to the Apple Store. And I was the guy at the Apple Store that met you every morning when the store opened, and helped you fix your iPod or your iPhone, or was there the day the iPad launched. And I remember after having been at Apple for about 3 years after college, I remember telling my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, like, you're going to have to be the one who makes money in our relationship. I'm going to be the guy at the Apple Store until I die or retire. And I found my way kind of deeper into the technology world, and then got a phone call one day from a guy who was in the Genius Bar department when I was at the Apple Store. And he said, hey, I remember that you worked in advertising and always kind of wanted to get into the agency side of things. I'm actually a web developer now at an agency, and we were looking for an account supervisor, and I just wondered if you'd want to come talk about it. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of amazing, because I'd spent years emailing resumes and cover letters and interview requests and applications to every agency in my market. And all of a sudden I get an invitation to come and join one because I was a nice guy to the right person at the right time. So I joined this agency as an account supervisor, which in the advertising marketing world is kind of a mid-level client service person, the one that oversees the direction of accounts, that manages the people who handle the other clients day to day.
Right, right. So, like, where was your head at kind of going into this new job?
I immediately felt imposter syndrome, that feeling of, oh my God, I've been brought in at a level that is higher than what I was capable of and qualified for. How am I going to do this? Somebody's going to find out that I'm a fraud. And I sort of established my worst fear, which was that at some point, somebody's going to walk into my office and say, hey, funny story, we were doing payroll. We didn't realize that you were the kid from the Apple store. You can't be here. You're going to have to pack up your stuff and go back to the Apple store, and we're going to hire someone who is qualified for this role. And so that was, you know, the absurd, irrational, worst fear, worst case scenario. And it stayed with me for the 5 years I was at this agency.
So like when you're in the job, what was it kind of like day to day? Like, were you doing well? Were you kind of figuring it out? Like, what was going on?
I struggled in the role that I had. I knew how to be a good person. I knew how to be a good mentor, but I just hadn't done the job of the people below me that I was responsible for managing. And so when it came to practical day-to-day advice, I just couldn't give it. And I stayed many, many late nights and tears and stress and panic and probably loud music and screaming and all the other things that come when you're in over your head. I floated from role to role. I did have some breaks. I won some awards and was given some local credibility and some recognition and some leadership groups. And I found my way promoted all the way at this company up to a vice president level.
Oh, wow. So you're in a good spot, but I guess what happens next?
So at the end of this story, I'm managing probably 15 people, and I went on a vacation with my wife for a week. It was really the first long vacation we had taken in a long time. And I remember commenting to my wife about how quiet my emails were, and that was very concerning to me. I thought, like, you know, it should be total chaos when I'm gone. They should be desperate for my help. They should be calling me every day and apologizing for interrupting, but we need your help. And it didn't happen. And I thought, well, okay, you know, maybe that means I've done something right. And the place is going to go on and be just fine while I'm gone. So I came back from my week-long vacation. I sat down in my office to do the staff meeting that we have every morning where a good third of the agency comes into my office and we talk through production tasks for the week. And nobody from my team came in. And instead, the owners of the company came in. And they said, hey, welcome back. Hope you had a good vacation. Today's your last day. And we need you to pack everything up and go. I thought they were kidding. I thought they were going to give me a promotion or just kind of joke around and break the tension, say have a good week. And so I didn't quite absorb that information on the first time. And I just kind of smiled and shook his hand and said, yeah, okay. And he said, no, for real, like, here's a box you need to pack up. It's been real. And then he walked out of the room and the HR person came in the room and sat down with me, and it just sort of all sunk in. It was terrifying. My worst fear had happened right before my eyes in almost exactly the way I feared it always would. I remember packing up my things. I had a big corner office, and it took about 2 hours to get everything down to my car. And I passed some of my coworkers on my way through the hallways and the elevators and sort of saw their look of confusion and then immediately run to grab a phone or immediately run to see what was going on. I remember getting in the car, ready to head home, and calling my wife. This is, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning on a Monday, and said, hey, this is not a joke. I have just been fired and I'm going to be okay. I'm going to go home. I've got all my stuff in my car, but I just wanted to let you know, I guess, and I'll see you after work. And went home and started trying to figure out what was next.
Was there ever a sense of relief at all when you were walking out?
No, it didn't come for much later. At that moment, I thought, okay, like, that was your one big break. It took you 3 or 4 years out of college to find it. You found it by accident. They hired you probably misguidedly, and your time ran out. You had your chance, and time to go back to the Apple store. Time to go back to a Best Buy, time to figure out, you know, how to get back to the career that you had abandoned for this and try to pick those pieces up and put them all back together.
And did you feel like, just put yourself back in like that car, but like, did you feel like it was something you had done, or did it feel like this was out of my control and I was food for the machine at this point? You know, like, what was your thought?
It absolutely felt like something I had done. In the moment, I raced through my head. I mean, I got no feedback. I got no direction. You know, they don't tell you that when you're fired, they're not going to sit down with you and give you a report card and a formal exit interview and hold your hand through it. They're just going to say, get your crap and get out. And that feeling of incompleteness, the lack of closure, was really traumatic. And the idea that you can show up to work and do everything that you think is right and start your day the same way that you always do, and then kind of get hit by a truck is very paralyzing. It makes you question everything that you ever said, everyone you ever said it to. You invent things in your mind, or at least I did, of, maybe it was this thing, maybe it was this conversation. Oh, I really shouldn't have said that. You find yourself then going into future conversations very guarded and very distrustful of everyone in the room and feeling like maybe I shouldn't say anything. Is it worth picking a battle on this? Is this going to be the thing that gets me a promotion, or is this going to be the thing that gets me fired? Either way, maybe I'll just hold off. It was really traumatic. I was too nervous and too anxious to understand the difference between taking a position that is a stretch for you and taking a position that is wrong for you. And that's a really fine line. I have told people it's the feeling of like, if you're sore the next day after you work out, are you sore because you did it right and your muscles are fatigued and growing? Or are you sore because you tweaked your back and you probably shouldn't do that anymore? And it's hard to tell in that moment whether it's a good soreness or a bad soreness. And especially having come from a traumatic experience like that, it followed me for a couple of years.
So how did those feelings of failure and just that fear that you're kind of talking about, how did that kind of manifest itself like externally? Like did you see like signs of it in other areas of your life?
Everything becomes a bit of a Rorschach test. You project what you want to see, or whatever is manifesting in your brain. So the new place that I went to, I projected all over that place. If it was quiet and people were in a boardroom, I wanted to know who was in the boardroom. And oh my God, why am I not in that boardroom? They must be talking about me. Oh, today's the day I get fired. I would have a disagreement with my boss about something very trivial. Do we place social media ads on this channel or this channel? Do we go after this client or that client? And if I lost that argument, I would go back down to my desk and just kind of pack things up. Not overtly, not in a way that would raise any alarms, but just kind of thought like, ooh, maybe I'm too comfortable here. I should probably go ahead and take that art down off my wall. Or I need to make sure that my files are backed up, that I have a copy of my address book, just in case something catches me off guard again. And so, I manifested a lot of that fear and a lot of that trauma and nervousness on the next 2 years, really, of my career.
Yeah. What was the hardest part?
There was a feeling of lack of control, of never knowing if the things that I was doing right would matter. You can come into work and be a good person. You can come into work and be a good boss. You can be a good mentor. You can put out product that is successful. You can get the results that you're supposed to hit. You can reach all the goals that they set for you. You can have a great review. All of those sort of surface level achievements that you're looking for, the resume builders, the nest egg builders. And you can walk into your office one morning and they'll just fire you. And they don't have to give you a reason. They don't have to explain. It may or may not have anything to do with you. It might be an external factor, especially in our business. If the economy's down, sometimes marketing gets cut, clients leave, other people have better offers. There's a lot of those external factors you can't control. And it leaves you searching for purpose. If I can do everything right and still come home at the end of the day and not know how I'm going to feed my family and have to start all over again, what am I doing? It's a really scary thing.
Yeah. So before getting fired, what did you think about people that get fired?
I think I found myself falling into the trap that you see in politics sometimes of like, you are in control of your own destiny, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. You are responsible for what happens to you. Make better choices, work harder. If you do things right, the world will repay you for it and you will be okay. And so if I had to fire somebody, if I had to let somebody go, or if I saw somebody who had gotten let go, I immediately defaulted to like, ooh, what did they do? They must have done something wrong. You assume that they are responsible for what happened to them. You assume that they had it coming. I guess, in short. And it is, it's really interesting when you get to the other side of that, of how it recasts those memories and visions. And I actually found myself reaching out to a lot of people who had been fired in or around my orbit those previous years, and just kind of trying to reconnect and going like, hey man, you're still alive. You're still a human. I hope that your family is doing well. I hope that you found a good place. I just wanted to let you know I'm here, if I can be a friend. I mean, there is sort of that traumatic event that happens on the other side of somebody getting fired, right? Which is all the people who are left behind. There's the feeling of going through and collecting their computer monitors from their desk and going, does anybody want these pens? Does anybody want this keyboard? And it's a little bit of like looting the dead. And of course, the problem there is you are treating someone who's very much still alive and maybe just a couple of miles from you as though they are dead. And I think the uncoupling of your career from your personal identity is one of the most important things I've learned from that, is that you are not your job. And so gaining one, losing one, being promoted, being fired, these are all just occurrences that happen. They don't define who you are. They don't define what you're about. And so it was an opportunity for me to go back and reform connections with people that I had kind of dismissed and thought like, well, you know, if you're not going to play in my bubble anymore, you don't matter. If you got fired, you probably did that to yourself. I don't know what to do for you. I certainly can't recommend you for another job because something must have happened that I didn't know about. You know, there's a lot of that that circulates.
If you could change anything about that experience, you know, just to see what happens, like what would it be and why?
You know, so much of that job was pretending I knew what I was doing. It was faking it till I made it. And you don't ever really make it when you do that. And so, in those moments where I was modeling behavior that I was learning from people who were not good at what they did, I mean, I have no problem telling you that the people I worked for were not good at what they did. And that proved true over and over again in the years since I was fired. But I modeled how to be a good manager, or how to be a boss, or how to be a creative, or how to be a writer from those people, even when I knew the behavior was not authentic to who I am or it didn't feel right. And so if I could go back, you know, and tell that younger me something, or if I could play that out over again and do something different, I think it would have been to trust my instincts a little bit more. And frankly, you know, I probably would have been fired sooner had I trusted my instincts. And that's in part why you fake it for a while, is you're holding on. But I would rather be fired authentically in who I am, doing things that I believe are right, with good intentions, with clear communication, than to hang on to a job that didn't feel authentic, that felt slimy, that put me in a position with people where I was ultimately complicit in bad behavior that I had nothing to do with. But by hanging on and by recruiting people to join that company, I am sort of attesting to the fact that, hey, we can overlook that stuff because we can do good work when they leave the room. I think those are huge mistakes that I made early on, and I would go back and get fired sooner by being authentic to who I am. And to trust my gut and do the right thing and treat the people around me the way that they deserved to be treated, not the way that somebody above me told me I should treat them.
Does it bum you out to talk about it, or are you kind of you're done and you're past it?
That's an understandable question to ask. And I think a big part of why I like talking about stuff like this with you and with anybody else is I find that it takes the sting out of it by owning it. And the validation for that comes from talking to other people, you know, especially in 2020, especially during COVID, and especially during a rough economy. There are so many people who have lost their jobs due to no circumstances of their own, or people who have lost their jobs because their bosses finally had a good excuse to let them go when there was something under the surface for a long time. I've seen some of that too. Talking about it and owning it has created a culture where I'm the first person a lot of people call when they're going through this. Whether they are in a job where they are not satisfied or feeling pushed into a direction that's not authentic to them, or whether they have just been let go and they don't know who to talk to other than their spouse and they don't know how to work through those feelings. And it's such a beautiful thing that by owning your story, you can help other people get through theirs. And the added piece of this that I have to share, because it wouldn't be a full story if I didn't, is that first time I got fired was not the last. But what I have learned through this process and through growing in my career is that I had real crippling anxiety as a result of all of this, and as a result of other things that happen in your life. You know, you are conditioned in marketing and advertising that we are in a stressful industry and anxiety is normal. And we're conditioned that working long hours and burning out and being very heated and dramatic or toxic with people is just how you get to the best idea. And it's just not true. I had a series of panic attacks at a large agency I worked at, and had them over the course of 1 week, and finally went to a doctor and talked. And I am so incredibly grateful that that doctor said to me, "You know, I get that you are a passionate guy. I get that you're a creative spirit, but some of the anxiety that you're feeling, while pieces of it are rooted in traumatic events, some of it is chemical. Try this," and recommended some anxiety medication for me. And it took about 30 days for that to kick in and for it to kind of level in your system and work through that part. But I found myself looking into my life. I literally was standing in front of my closet picking out what to wear one morning, about 60 days after all of that had happened. And I said to my wife, "These don't look like my clothes. If I had a choice in what I wore today, these are not the things I would wear." And then that theme sort of carried through the rest of my week at that particular agency of like, these aren't the meetings I would be in. These aren't the clients I would work on. This isn't the way I would write it. This isn't the way I would approach it. This isn't even a client I would want to work with if I had a choice. And getting through the chemical block of some of that anxiety helped me start to see more clearly and helped me learn to trust my gut without the irrational parts in your brain. It helped quiet some of the imposter syndrome, and it helped me see the value in some of the real doubts and concerns, and to get over the ego part, to get over the paranoid part, and learn to control my destiny a little bit more, as much as I could.
That's the show. First episode done. I hope you like it enough to subscribe and share with all your podcast-loving friends. Heck, you could even leave a review if that's your thing. I'd like to thank my guests for being so open and honest with me, a stranger, because in case you couldn't tell, I am not a therapist, just someone willing to listen and ask some questions. That being said, if you do have a personal failure or setback you'd be willing to talk to me about, please email me at thesetbackpod@gmail.com. That's thesetbackpod@gmail.com. Or hit up The Setback Pod on Twitter. The Setback is written and recorded by me, Ike Peters. There should probably be some kind of unique sign-off right about here, but I got nothing right now. I'll keep working on it. Okay, bye!